Welcome to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is Naomi Pierce with Pierce Communications. Naomi, good afternoon. Thank you for being with me on the show.
Good afternoon to you, too. Thanks for having me.
It is awfully nice to hear from you. I've been wanting to interview you for a long, long time.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we've been friends for quite a while, haven't we? I think I met you maybe at a Macworld back, I don't know, Macworld Expo in 2004, 5?
Yeah. We've been friends for long enough that I cannot possibly remember how we first met.
That's good. It's been a long, let's just say it's been a long time.
Whenever I think of you, I think Big Iron servers, stuff like that.
Oh, Mr. Supercomputing when I was with Apple or something like that.
Something right? Like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed, it's been a while.
So we put together a agenda, the things we wanted to talk about, and I never knew, or you know, even though we've known each other for a long time, it was Jeff Gamet who told me that you're actually married to a luminary at Apple, Sal Segoyan, who's, of course, the father of AppleScript. And when he told me that, I was on the floor.
It is pretty funny. I'm laughing because the first question out of the chute, you make me somebody's wife. Way to lean in there, Marilyn.
Well, no, I didn't mean it that way. It's a really fascinating aspect of you.
It's not a secret. We were actually outed by the Wall Street Journal after we got married, which I didn't see coming, but we were on one of those Mac Mania geek cruises. Mm. And the story came out, and I'm like, well, I guess people know we're married now. There it is. You remember the geek cruises, right?
Yeah.
The Mac Mania, I think they were called. I think they should be re-revved up. I think you guys would be great sponsors, but that's just a blatant lobbying.
Do you get attempts to get information about what's going on at Apple?
Uh-uh. No. I don't want to know. No, not at all. The point of an entity is to have some, I mean, you have boundaries, right? Any entity, whether it's a company or a human, when you're doing the kind of work that I do, which is communications, you want to let, you know, you want to communicate, but you also have rights to your boundaries. So I figure Apple's going to tell us what they want to tell us when they're ready. And I don't personally feel like we have any right to know until they feel good and ready to tell us. I think that's a basic right. So I don't usually get involved in rumor mongering or any such silliness. I know people are very interested and it's big sport, but
there's always one crackpot in the crowd who, you know, is half serious, half kidding. You know, something like that.
You can't tell in text very well. When you're reading, for example, a Mac Observer article, you know, the text, you would have to really know the writer pretty well to be able to tell if they were joking or if they were being sarcastic or something like that. And I think people get involved in it because they're excited and they're interested. But yeah. You know, one thing I've learned about Apple is that they will tell you precisely what they mean. I mean, they...
Unless it's one of those planned leaks that I got involved with a long time ago.
I find it amazing how many people will try to second guess what Apple meant when they said blah, blah, blah. And I just sort of shake my head because whatever the blah, blah, blah is precisely what they meant. They chose the words carefully and they mean what they say and they say what they mean. And why people just don't want to believe them, I got nothing. I have no idea. But yeah, Sal is an interesting character. I mean, he's brilliant. He's kind. He's funny and he's formidable. Kind of intense sometimes. He's, you know, really generous and empathetic and an interesting combination of, you know, he's technical and artistic. He's a musician, you know.
Oh yeah.
And he's productive, and he's just a really neat human being. I kind of think he's good looking too. So, did I mention brilliant?
I guess you did.
And his values are really built to last, you know.
I have noticed that there are people or friends of mine, Dwayne Straub and Dave Hamilton, who I know play in a band with Chris Breen and Paul Kent.
Right.
And these people are amazing. They're geniuses when it comes to Macintoshes, but they're also great musicians. It's a sight to see. It's inspiring.
It's applied math, isn't it?
Well, it's inspiring to me because I have no musical talent whatsoever. So,
but you have plenty of
I just
of
watch
talents.
These people in awe.
It is really kind of amazing. And the mentality of taking an instrument and then doing beautiful things with it, doing a lot more than a simple approach, you know, studying it and getting into it and really making it sound awesome, I think is a telling approach to how people view the tools with which they involve themselves.
And there's also a mathematical beauty in music, and people who are good at mathematics or computers tend to be also good at music, which is has a mathematical basis.
Absolutely.
I always wonder, where did mine go? It disappeared.
They can be developed.
Yeah, it could be. I've always wanted to learn to play the piano.
I started off playing the piano.
Cool.
I was playing the piano at 7 years old. Suzuki method, where they assert that that you learn how to speak first by ear, and then you learn how to read music. And so they would teach us how to play first by ear, and then later on you would read music. So I was a classical pianist all the way from then through high school.
So I take it that was something you wanted to do. You weren't being pressured?
I'm sure it was some of both.
Mm.
I do remember many tears of, you know, not wanting to practice now, and it was time for practice, and that's what we were going to do. But, you know, parents need to keep their kids occupied with productive things, right? And, you know, in my family, you had to achieve a certain GPA, which, you know, they felt was the standard for you. And you had to, you know, do a sport and an art, pick one. Whatever you want to do, right? And, you know, I look back at that and, you know, God bless them for doing that, because I think it really helps to, you know, to learn how to play on a team and to learn how to do an art. And mm-hmm. I mean, I tried to paint, and there was nothing going on there. It was just not going to work. My interest level, non-existent. It just was horrible. Very frustrating experience. But musically, I could play piano. And by the time I got to needing to know how to type, I had the independent finger motion. I could literally type faster than I could speak. So, you know, that helped.
I took typing in high school, but I couldn't do it because the way they wanted me to type didn't fit with my mentality and my fingers. So over the years, I developed my own typing method.
Oh, neat.
And it's like I put the keys in a buffer in my head. And
sure.
I go to the next closest finger goes to the next key in the buffer.
There
and
you go.
I kind of just learned my own way of typing. I can do 30, 40 words a minute just by knowing what character I want to type next and what the closest finger is.
Sure.
So it's funny to watch somebody do that. Yeah.
You supply your creativity in a different way.
Well, maybe that's putting a good spin on it. So, I wanted to ask you about Pierce Communications, because listeners may or may not know that I have continuing dialogue with you because I'm a big fan of two companies you represent, Bare Bones and its flagship product, BB Edit, and Corellia Software, their flagship sandbox, which is a website creation tool. So throughout the years, you and I have continued to talk, and you've provided me with licenses and PR information and first looks at products. I wanted to ask you more about that. How do you
sure.
How do you get a job like that?
it's
something
no
that's always fascinating.
I don't know how somebody else would go about doing it. I really only know my own story. You know, I could not give somebody else advice on how to find a path to that. I just sort of know my own route to it, which, straight out of college, I worked for a big agency, and I started off half time in advertising and half time in public relations. It was the umbrella company was Young and Rubicam, and Burst and Marsteller was on one side, and the Y&R was Y&R Saatchi, something like that. Y&R was on the other side, and over time, I did more and more of the PR stuff, and was attracted to this communications puzzle, which to me was always very fascinating. I did a whole background in big agency work, so like consumer goods and corporate communications and biz to biz, and I did a whole lot of crisis management work with that team, because apparently I'm very good under pressure. With big companies, your Chevron's, your B of A's, your United Airlines. I don't know if you remember Flying Tigers on the freight side.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine who flew for them.
Yeah. Perrier, Clorox. I mean, the list goes on and on. Bibi Pampers. All kinds of really big corporate clients. And I worked for many, many years in the LA office. And then they transferred me up to San Francisco because I wanted to live here. And so many years between the two of them. And at a certain point, while I really liked it, it was very, it was a great experience and always go. And there was plenty of stuff to occupy my brain. Lots of running around and doing things on tight deadlines, which keeps things from being boring, of course. I felt like I got a really good basis in that. But I wanted to sort of go back to a little bit of where my heart is. And that was technology. In college, I had sort of a dual marketing major with programming and data processing minor.
Data processing.
I know, huh?
Ooh.
On vaxes.
Well, don't feel bad. I cut my teeth at White Sands Missile Range on a vax.
There you go. See?
Yeah, in VMS.
We had two.
Yeah.
One was Gumby and one was Pokey. In any case, I wanted to sort of get back to that and the brain candy that goes into figuring all of the technology stuff. And so I went to work for a smaller agency that was specialized in tech, Neas Ryan Haller, and it was a great experience. I was also the snot-nosed 20-something that said, we don't even have an internet practice. How can we call ourselves a high-tech PR agency without an internet practice? We suck. And my boss said, you know what, kid? You're right. Go fix it.
I knew that was coming.
It was a light bulb moment for me. It was like, oh, I can do that, huh? And so I went and got their first internet-related client. This was before the browser came out, before Mosaic. So for many, many years, there were a lot of online community things going on and a lot of internet related, believe it or not, the internet and the web are not the same thing.
You know, it kind of sounds like me because me and my Unix mentor at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, Charlie Hammonds, he's, bless him, he's not with us anymore. Ooh. I remember sitting with Charlie Hammonds and at his deck Unix computer, and we had a download of the first NCSA web server, and we're sitting there, and we've never seen these questions before. And so we're sitting there through the installer, and Charlie's going, yep, I don't understand it. Take the default. Yep, just hit return. Take the default. Take the default. And we step our way through this. And then we have an NCSA web server up and running. And we go, oh, it works. And so we hit it with Mosaic on our Macs, and there it is. And
Do you remember where you were when you first heard about Mosaic?
Yes, I was at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and Charlie was in the computing room. We had a kind of a laboratory, and he said, John, come over here. I want to show you this, and he was hitting one of the first websites in Germany that had built a website, and it was on a Unix computer, and I was a Mac person, and so he was delighting me with the virtues of Unix and Unix operating systems and DEC alphas. And so I thought, well, this is really cool. So the first thing I did was I went back to my Mac Quadra in my office and started munging around. And sure enough, there was an Apple-built browser. And there was also Tim Berners-Lee's Macintosh, first Macintosh web browser, which is buggy as heck, crashed all the time. But it got me on the air.
Sure.
And so that was where I got started. Sounds like we had similar experiences.
You know, by the time I heard about the browser, I had already decided, you know, if I can do it for them, I can do it for me, and, you know, started my own company around. I mean, I'd already been in business for like a year, maybe not quite a year, but I remember exactly where I was. I had a bunch of people over for spaghetti for dinner, and two folks, M and Peter Normal, P-T-E-R, Normal, the Normals, were there, and Peter started telling me about the browser, and it was like an earthquake. You know, it was like, you know, I knew instantly life had just changed, you know?
Is that the point where you engaged Apple products and Macs, or how did that happen?
Well, no, my old agency was a little bit busy and hipped me to, well, I don't know if you remember, do you remember Mac HTTP?
I do.
Originally Chuck Shutton's.
Yes. Oh, famous. Yep. Old good times.
Well, so here's a little back channel story. The if I recall it correctly, so caveat that, I think I do, but Apple was going to buy Mac HTTP at the time. And I don't know if you remember a magazine called Mac Week. Remember Mac Week? It was Mac a Ziff Week Davis.
Mac Week was one of my inspirations. Henry Knorr and Don Crabb.
Henry Knorr.
Two people I admired. And I went, I love these guys. I want to do that someday.
They're great. Both of them are great. Absolutely. One of the running jokes for Mac Week, you know, you sort of jokingly called it Mac Leak.
Leak. And
they did an article about this upcoming, you know, this rumor. So you want to know why not to let your company become a sieve is, here we go, right? They did an article about this upcoming rumor Apple was going to buy Mac HTTP. And a guy named David Thompson picked up the phone and dug up Chuck Shotton's number and said, before you sign that deal, talk to us. Star9 bought the product instead. You know, do you want to go work for a big corporate entity, or do you want to go direct the future of, you know, I don't know how he pitched it exactly, but and that product turned into WebStar. And so WebStar, of course, riffing off the old WordStar name, I suppose. They had already a product named ListStar, so maybe, I don't know who was hoogling who. But the that was the first, the 1.0 of that. I was brought on board to launch that from from 1.0 on, and worked with those guys for, I don't know, a decade maybe. Long time. A lot of serving went on Macs, particularly because it wasn't Classic wasn't really very hackable. They had that Hack a Mac challenge where anybody that could hack it got $10,000. Took years for somebody to figure out.
No ports open. It wasn't Unix at all.
There was some plugin somewhere that finally did it in, I think. It was, you know, always the weakest link, right? But yeah, it changed everything. It changed how we relate and compute these days. Even just communicating with your friends, right, is all different. And at that, you know, back in the day, there were a lot of people on boards, but to get there, you had to use like, you know, some kind of CompuServe tunneling over to, you know, and then you logged on, you know.
So here we are, a young woman who's into big time corporate communications and public relations, and then all of a sudden, here you are with Mac HTTP running on a Mac, and the light bulb goes on, right?
No, well, the light bulb moment was the browser. I was already well convinced that the internet was going to change everything. Absolutely. The internet was going to change everything, and it kind of has. I mean, I remember the first time I decided I was going to spend a whole weekend without logging on to the well. I'll confess, I was a little twitchy. It was surprisingly difficult to do, you know?
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know when I'm away from my Mac, I'm usually with an iPad.
Well, but, you know, it sort of brings it back the point that, you know, technology should conform to us. You know, who's the boss here? Should I conform? Technology should conform to me, not me to it.
Well, Apple's vision is that it does exactly that. And it's so, these products so insinuate themselves into your lives and serve you that you may feel like you're being enslaved, but in fact, they're really doing exactly what you want them to do, right?
It depends on what you've chosen to spend your time on, right? The idea of if I'm away from my Mac, you know, I have my iPad or iPhone or watch or whatever going on, all that, you know, one makes choices in how one sets these things up in order to enhance their life, their productivity, the things that are important to them. And that's, you know, that's pretty key.
That's an important part of technology life. You know, I see that wherever I go on the internet or wherever I look on Twitter, there is this constant struggle by all of us technologists, writers, developers, to have some sort of sensible life with family and children and spouses and the other things we want to do with our lives. And
maybe meditate, live a little mindfully sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It can be tried. But, you know, it sort of brings up the notion of and or, you know, the cars and trucks, right? Using the right tool for the right job. So what's the right tool for a specific job? And I'm a big believer in, you know, cars and trucks, if you remember that metaphor from Steve, right?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. When I think it was in the context of when the iPad came out and the post-PC era, Steve commented, if I recall correctly, that we'll always need trucks, heavy lifters, but most people like their cars, meaning, you know, iPads.
Well, the way I remember it is about 3 weeks before a town hall, Steve was being interviewed by Walt Mossberg, one of these All Things D or whatever.
Oh, you have a good memory.
Right? It was about 3 weeks. Well, the reason why I can remember it is because the town hall was on 10/20/2010. And I'm sorry, that's just never going to leave my brain. And that town hall, I was really happy to hear Steve talk about cars and trucks because to me, the devices were, you know, there's enough difference in the devices. I like and, You know, usually when something gets really, really intense in terms of an argument, I've found that the right answer is, you know, it's a signal that the right answer is and, you know, is, you know, is it this or that? You know, usually by the time it gets intense, it's the right answer.
That's a great perspective.
Both.
We talked about that in the pre-show, and I have an appreciation for that because there's so many people want to think in terms of absolutes. And that's an interesting observation that in many cases, for an intelligent mind, it's and.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. The back to the Mac, that town hall was back to the Mac. So 3 weeks later, I was a little bit, you know, gripped with, what do they mean? You know, I didn't want my, you know, it was, I like and cars and trucks. Some things that you learn, some lessons learned from the iOS, bringing it back to the Mac. Okay, fine. But, you know, for the love of hummus, don't give me a El Camino. I like cars and trucks.
Not
right?
only does it extend to, you know, cars and trucks, but it extends to lots of different kinds of trucks. My wife is a college professor, and so many of her students, she says, will poo-poo another operating system, and they'll say, oh, you know, Windows sucks, and then Macintosh is the way to go, or vice versa. And she ends up telling them, look, if you're going to be useful in the technical community, if you're going to be employable and have skills, you have to be able to do anything, lots of things, and what your employer needs. And at the moment, your employer may need you to be working with Windows and C#. So know everything.
Well, another example is sort of wrapping it back to what you started with. When the JavaScript for automation came out, I was so frustrated at how many people came up to me, like AppleScript Objective-C, it's hard to say. The JavaScript for automation, you know, it has access to the Cocoa APIs and the Apple events and et cetera. And if I had a nickel for everybody, it came up to me and said, is this an AppleScript killer? It's like, what?
Yeah.
Are you crazy? This is yet another fabulous tool in your toolbox. Why you got to make this an or? This is an and.
Has there ever been really a real killer that we can remember?
Point out. Is that the other signal, maybe? The other signal that, you know, the answer is and when somebody starts calling something a killer?
Yeah. Well, you know, the iPhone turned out to be the BlackBerry killer, I suppose.
Yeah. It's revolutionary, but last I checked, it wasn't dead yet.
No, it's not.
You know, it's still and. You still have choices, you know. Always with the choices, AM or FM, and.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
So we only have a few minutes left.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you about how you fell in with, if you want to, Bare Bones and Corellia, and what you're doing with them, and how you got going on that.
Well, all my clients usually come from word of mouth. So, and you know, I expand and contract other capabilities as needed, but I've been working with Barebone Software for a long time. I'm trying to remember. I vaguely think that I met Rich before, but I distinctly remember having a discussion with him on one of the Mac Mania cruises.
This is Rich Siegel, the president of Barebones.
Correct. Talking about how very many companies will spend so much time on development, and it's like sweating the details on a great menu and getting the right band and putting up the fabulous decorations. But you know, if you haven't picked up the phone and called your friends and said, "Hey, come over," or if you know you haven't sent the invitations and done follow up, like, you know, does anybody need a babysitter? Maybe we can pool babysitters, you know, and done some of that work. You know, you can throw the best party in the world, but if nobody shows up, it's probably because you haven't done that work. And it's always, there's a lot of, there's a lot more that goes into you know, public relations, corporate communications, market communications, than people realize. I mean, there's always, you know, that's a very big part of the product, and you don't need to ask Apple to understand that. So that was, I don't even remember what year. I remember it involved a cruise. I remember Alaska. I remember the cruise was Alaska. Mm. But
I've always admired the way you do your work, if I may say so, because I get several hundred emails a day from PR agencies, small developers, big developers, PR, press people, and the gamut is very wide in terms of their professionalism. I'll get an email from somebody who's representing a fairly well-known company, and they might be on contract. And they'll say, hey, John, I'd like to send you this software that will back up your hard disk. And let me know if you want a code. You know, buy Betsy. And I'm going, wait a minute. Where's the signature? Who is this person? Why do they have a Gmail address instead of, you know, the corporate company that they're representing, .com? Mm. And where's their signature block? And how do I call them on the phone if I want to? You know, there's never... So I see a lot of those. It just amazes me the spectrum of professionalism there is in the PR agency. You're one of the best, if I may say so.
Well, blush. Thank you. I mean, I try to do good work. I try to keep it, you know, honest and in depth, and time it right. I mean, I used to not look down on my nose, but I used to assume that PR people, you know, just because they're smiling, I wasn't sure that there was a lot of depth to it, but there's a lot more going on, and there's a lot of juggling. So it's very gratifying to hear you say something like that. And, I don't really know what to say about other people. It's a lot of work, and you try to do some in-depth.
Yeah.
And get to know your journalists, because ultimately that's...
That's the key.
What's going on.
That's the key. I mean, like, I have a filter in my email that says if it's not addressed to me personally, it goes right into spam or trash. If they don't even bother to send the email directly to me, they're not going to get the time of day.
Well, although some companies tell you don't send email directly, and so there's all that. It's a whack-a-mole game, I'm telling you. people are moving around all over the place, and it's a lot going on. But the things that are ultimately very interesting, you know, maybe they bubble up onto your radar, and you can, you know... I would say cut the person a little bit of slack, although phone numbers are good. Multiple mediums are always good. You know, you can't juggling communications mechanisms, you know, back with that whole and.
I'm also a member, charter member of the Kara Swisher Club. Pick up the darn phone.
Well,
I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to just reach over and pick up and chat with a PR agent who just sent me an exciting email that I wanted to know more about, and they're like, I'm out of the office.
Oh, really? No, I love the phone. The medium, the voice interface is so much richer than text, and you can convey an awful lot in a very short amount of time. So, you know, when I'm near my phone, you know, if it rings, and with very rare exception, I will answer it myself. So you just feel free to call me.
And I do. And I have. So we're just about out of time here. Do you have something else you want to talk about? Anything that they came up in our pre-show that you want to drift into?
Well, no, but as you might expect, we will have news coming up.
What are your skunk works?
I got a skunk works going on. I got at least 3 product introductions coming down the pike in the next couple of months.
Oh, nice.
Which has me on deadline on some construction going on in my house. So I'm hitting the gas pedal on that. And
And I know you'll keep me informed.
Indeed, I will. Yes. And I'll try to say precisely what I mean.
Excellent. And with that blockbuster, In the words of Jeremy Clarkson, we'll have to wrap it up.
There you go.
So, Naomi, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. This was delightful. It was a pleasure getting to know you just a little bit better. And listeners, thank you so much for coming by. We always appreciate you guys listening in on Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you next time.